my secret. Just do something that ain't nobody ever done before, but make it sound like something that's always been there forever.
This next song
is all about love.
And I wrote it
all by myself.
And welcome back to not quite TFAL. Maybe it's TFAL Plus. I think the name that I had been floating around was OPM, Original Filipino Musings. or it could just be like OPM
Musics.
Everything. Yeah, music.
Actually, it could be Original Filipino Musics.
Original Filipino Musics. OPM, everything. OPM, lahat. Sobrang OPM. You know, like...
Or OPM na OPM.
Because we like to double up, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
We like to do that double thing.
Like beer na beer. OPM na yeah. OPM. OPM talaga.
Yeah, OPM talaga. All of these are good titles. You'll find out when you listen to this what the title actually is. It might not be any of these, but, you know, maybe it'll be all of them. But as we mentioned in the last episode, we'll be talking about Eraserheads. There is a documentary coming out in North America that's been out already other places, but about the Eraserheads. And we won't get into like the documentary and what it covers necessarily, but we're going to talk about Eraserhead songs. And the reason I wanted to do this even, was because, you know, Eraserheads was kind of my entree really into OPM beyond what my parents listened to. And it was like a way for me to kind of discover that music just in general. And so, whether or not like they are the best band, if they are the Beatles of the Philippines, like some people say, that is all for you to decide, I think. Right. But I think like there are songs that stuck out to me and my co-host Les. Hi Les.
Hi, I'm Les. Hello, everyone.
Listen to our previous episode for a longer introduction, and also the full interview that we did with Les, like back in 2020 something. Was it 1, 2? I think
maybe 2021.
Yeah. In our last episode, if you listen to it, I mean, you know, we basically went down a rabbit hole of everything OPM, and that is probably how this show is going to go, and every other show that we do. Because we're just kind of, we have a problem. We're we're archivists, and we like to be loud about it. So,
AKA hoarders.
Hoarders, yes. In true Filipino fashion. Yes. And so the way we're going to do this is like, I have identified two Eraserheads that I'd like to talk about. Les has identified two Eraserheads that they want to talk about. And we're just going to talk about it. And also, if you're listening to this episode and you want to say what you think about these songs or talk about the races in general, feel free to comment, like, subscribe, everything, the usual things you do to streaming media. We hope that you have some thoughtful things to say as well, or maybe think our choices are trash and want to trash our opinions on this stuff. Go for it.
Stop.
But just know that me and Les had the best opinions possible, so I don't know what you're going to do.
No, we're just opinionated, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. We just love music. I think we're music lovers is all. And we're a little obsessive about music. Yeah. If you're listening, you probably are too.
Right? If you gotten this far, then you definitely... are here because
you're
obsessed.
You're a nerd.
You're a nerd, or you want to call us out. All of those are are valid impulses.
Yes.
So Eraserheads. So as I was saying, I mean, the Eraserheads was like my entree into the broader spectrum of Filipino music. Again, my parents listened to mostly ballads. You know, easy listening. Essentially, I think is the best way to describe the Filipino music they listen to, other than maybe whatever random dance trends were happening and that they wanted to learn to dance to, you know, and then other than like maybe the things that were on whatever variety shows were streaming on the international channel here in the States. I don't even remember when the Filipino Network, GMA and all those things became a thing. Maybe it was like the early 2000s. But before that, it was just kind of like hard to like discover things other than through word of mouth. or going to whatever Filipino store you might have had in your community, if you had one, buying whatever tapes they had on the wall, or having your relatives maybe send you CDs. At least for me growing up here, we weren't exactly like swimming in all this stuff, right? And so, as I said in the last episode, like when I started listening to the Racerheads was because I had heard of the band, and I had heard they were worth listening to from other people. But there was no way for me to like get that music until I finally went in, 98, I think it was, and bought CDs for myself. And then other than like maybe catching a song being played on the international channel, there wasn't like a normal outlet for me to get those things until, the late 90s. Because I wouldn't even know what to ask like my relatives in the Philippines, like, oh, send me an Eraserhead CDs. They'd probably be like, wait, who? What?
This is interesting because just randomly, I remember that after I moved here in 99, there's very few Filipino groceries here, but some of them had tapes and some of them had Eraserheads tapes. I just remembered seeing like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I think it was because of like more recent relatives who had come like in the 90s and early 2000s that is also like exposed to more things. Like, I remember like we crashed at my cousin's place over a summer, me and my roommate at the time. And like, he had like River Maya posters all over the extra room that we're sleeping in. I was like, who's River Maya? You know, like, I didn't have like, you know, I don't know who these groups were. But like, you know, people who like had immigrated post Marcos, post martial law era, you know, bringing their music with them, and like learning about that from them was kind of how I really kind of got into some of these other bands. But yeah, first CD I ever bought in the Philippines, Eraserheads single CD. I forgot what sequence it is in. I probably have it somewhere. But it's one of those things where like, if you hear like a compilation CD before you hear anything else, you kind of hear those songs in that order for the rest of your life. Like, I mean, the first time I heard Fleetwood Mac was from like a best of CD my mom got at like Costco or whatever. And now I can only hear those songs in that order of playing, you know, otherwise it's like weird to hear like the actual album cuts in between them. That's how it was for me with the Eraserheads. And like, you know, I the songs I'm going to talk about like in this series, like are the ones that like really grabbed me, or that I maybe like grew to appreciate even later. And in fact, the first song I want to talk about is one of their first and earliest songs, which is Doyang. Or is it Doyang? Or is it
Doyang?
Doyang.
Yeah.
Because I know it's kind of like a play of words, right?
Yes.
Because if you hear the song, it opens up with them singing, you know, the lyrics to what's the song? They say they tried to tell us we're too young, right? They sing that those lyrics.
They tried to tell us we're too young. Too young to really be in love.
And then they launch into this other song. And it's like a song that sounds like a bunch of other songs put together, almost like it's like a pastiche or like a bunch of things patched together. And I didn't know much Tagalog when I first heard these songs. So I kind of like learned and like looked up things and kind of gathered it over time. But it's kind of like at one point there's like a little reggae breakdown in the middle, right? They say like a Filipino nursery rhyme kind of thing in the middle of it too.
Yes.
It's like all over the place. And so I just thought it was just like, oh, this is like, what is this song? Right. And eventually when I started buying Filipino records, the first 45 that I bought was a very scratched up copy of that song. And like, to this day, so I DJ at a thing called Tuesday Night Cafe. It's in Little Tokyo here in Los Angeles. For almost every other show, maybe every show that I DJ, like I will close the night by playing that record. Just because like I just kind of created that as like a ritual thing, but also it's just kind of a nice way to like from whatever I was playing, kind of ease into something a little bit more chill kind of, but then it's very fast at the end.
Yes.
It's also very surprising for people because, like, if you don't know Eraserheads or Tagalog, you're kind of like, what the fuck is this song? And if you do know Eraserheads, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you played that song. And so it's always led to, like, at the end of a show, like, someone coming was like, I am so glad that you played that song, or like, I haven't heard that song in forever, because it is one of Eraserheads' oldest songs.
They don't play it.
They play it on shows, I think. Well, do they? Actually, I don't know. I haven't. The last Eraserheads show I went to, they were in LA before the pandemic. It was at the Palladium. Did they play it? I need to write that playlist down.
I have only ever seen them once, and I'll tell you when it's my turn, because yeah. So I don't know what they play now.
But do you remember where did you hear Toyang when it first came out, or is it something you like heard later?
Yeah, I mean, when Pareko was like being played on the airwaves, then that's when I had the tape, and the tape, you know, the Ultra Electromagnetic Pop, which is where Toyang is.
The other 45 that I bought with that Toyang 45 was also a Pareko 45, which is in even worse condition. I think they were like pressed on like styrene or something. They sound like a styrene 45. Like, you know those 45 from the 60s that, like,
I don't know if the Philippines pressed styrene, or either that or just it. I mean, either that's styrene or just like bad pressing.
Yeah. I mean, this is like deep record archivist nerdiness, but like, yeah, like there's some 45s where just like if you mess around with them too much, like they get Q-burned. And so, like, there's like 45s from like the 60s that were made on this material that like it would rub down basically the groove.
Mike, this is why I tell that's why I tell people, I joke around like all vinyl and some styrene, but no shellac.
Oh man.
What a nerd.
But that's why I was also like in the last conversation just asking about like, oh, like I wonder like how many, like how to find like certain Filipino bands on like vinyl. And I think trying to find this album on vinyl was like impossible, but finding the 45s in bad condition was a feasible thing maybe like 10 years ago on eBay when I found it. Mm-hmm. And then like also the thing that I realized once I picked up the CD, and compared it to the 45 was like, oh, also because it was recorded when it was recorded. And if you watch the documentary, like they talk about that recording process, it just sounds also just kind of like lo-fi by design, not by design, but like because of the circumstance under which they recorded. Like even if you buy the CD today, like it doesn't sound like, you know, Mariah Carey. It sounds like, you know, an album recorded, you know, in a modest studio in Manila in like the early 90s,
which could like still sound good. I think that the mixing, there's always been a thing about mixing in Filipino releases. We will get to that some other time, but a lot of times when I play OPM, even if it's like rock oriented, I have to mix it. Like I have to mix it because it doesn't sound good. There's just a thing. the way they mix back home
is
so tinny.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Teeth in the last conversation, and like, yeah, the versions that I hear on Spotify, at least, like, sound very compressed. And I was like, I don't know if that's Spotify or if that's just how it was mastered, you know, and it just music of that early 90s, mid 90s era, like, the production on that wasn't quite, you know, and these are like, for the most part, maybe like, you know, they might have been on some label in the Philippines, right, BMG or whatever, but like, they're still kind of like, kind of underground indie in their own way. It's not like, you know, producing like the highest quality studios in the Philippines.
But it was though. It was compared to because there are other more indie releases. They if you're on BMG, you will record at a better recording studio than these other people.
Yeah.
Because even when there was a compilation that my friends were in, and they borrowed my guitar for the recording, And we went to the studio and it was like super fancy. I'm like blanking on the name of the studio, but it still sounded like that. Like they just, the it's the guy that mixes, just his, maybe that's his style. I don't know. Or during that era, that was the way they like to mix. It's just, it's missing something, you know?
Yeah. And even when I bought the repress of Cutter Pillow, I was like, okay, I wonder if they like remastered this. And it sounds a little bit brighter. Yeah. But like, you know, I mean, I think like there's something to be said about, I mean, I think about this with like Filipino movies too, right? Like there's all these Filipino films that I want to see, but no one's really putting them out. There's probably also too much piracy, and the Criterion only recently has been doing Filipino movies. I think there's like maybe two or three on Criterion. Mm-hmm. But also it comes down to like who owns all these things, right? Who owns like the recorded music, who owns all these films, like, and who is taking the time to like master those things. And I know we know some people who are trying to like do that kind of work. But at the same time, yeah, like to your point, like the song sounds how it sounds, and you know, it probably adds to it in its own way, and it feels very much of its era. Mm-hmm. And so like also, but yeah, as I got to kind of understand what the song is about, it's kind of like, yeah, all over the place. Like what is that, like it's like a nursery rhyme or something kind of in the middle of it. What is that?
Bahay Kubo.
So is that like part of the song or something, or
just a bahay kubo, maliit lamang, just that part, right? Bahay namin,
maliit lamang. No, the pen desarapin.
Oh, pen desarapin.
What is that? Pen desarapin.
It's just a song we sung as kids.
Yeah. I mean, I'd never heard it until I heard this song. And so like
it's
yeah.
It's pen, pen, de sarapen, de cuchillo, de almacen, how, de carabao, batuten.
Right? Like, I'd never heard that until this song. And then I found out, I think inadvertently, not even that long ago, it was like, oh, it's from something else. I didn't realize it was just like a, you know, them covering something that was like from their childhood.
But it's just like, so, yeah, just so the lyric goes like, bahay namin, maliit lamang, but it was to the melody of bahay, kubo, like bahay. It's still, you know, then maybe that's why, yeah. Oh, I guess your parents didn't sing that to you, huh?
Yeah, right? And this is why I have you on this show.
Yeah, like the folks, I mean, I am 100% sure folks that are around my age who grew up in the Philippines, or at least in Manila, would know what that song is.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, if I played it around my parents, they'd probably like, yeah, obviously be like, oh, that song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, and also like I think about it, and I think maybe like watching the documentary helped me understand like the song, but it's just kind of like, you know, they were just kind of like jamming out and like putting things together and trying to like figure out what their sound was going to be. But also like, you know, a lot of the times when you're like a early songwriter, you kind of just write what you know, you know, and it feels like a song that was just like, oh, this is what it was, you know, this is us just like as kids, like messing around, just trying to have fun and like sing a song about like a girl and pretend we were a reggae band for part of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like meant to be like a fun song, but it's also like a song that like, because it's so like different from like things that I had heard up to that point, was just like, oh, this is, you know, again, like something that made me want to dig into their music more. And like, if I think about it, every song that I like by the Eraserheads is completely unlike the other song that I like by the Eraserheads. And that's, you know, something to be said about like having kind of like a vision to kind of just like want to do everything, but also make music that is just like, not just completely repetitive at all times. Which, you know, if I think about, to be fair, I mean, the five Belita records that I could see from behind me all sound fairly similar to each other. But even then, like, there's like one disco song, or there's like one, like, you know, there's like five ballads, and then there's like a couple covers.
You mean nine ballads?
Yeah, nine ballads.
Oh, you know, Filipinos and ballads.
Yeah. And so that's another thing too, though, because like I grew up in an era where I was listening to music that were like very strongly thematic, like within an album, like because around this time I was probably listening to a lot of like Radiohead. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I was listening to a lot of just like, you know, album music and not really like singles. And so like Eraserhead's very much a singles band, you know, and a lot of their songs, like, you know, are meant to be thought of as like these individual pieces. And whether or not there is like a bigger theme across this album, we're going to talk about one more song on this album later. It was just like, oh, so it's almost kind of like a variety of just kind of like all their influences, but also just a variety of all the things that they were kind of just into at the time. When we start talking about your song after this, I have a lot of questions about those influences. But anything else you want to say about Toyoung, or like, you know, what you thought of when you heard it, or was it even something you were into and you're like, nah, this is too radio for me?
I mean, the whole thing is radio, you know, like the whole thing was mainstream, and it was very out of character for me at that time to be into this tape. But and I don't, you know, like, I know I yap a lot, but a lot of times I don't over think a lot of songs. It's just like it has a good hook, a good melody, or something really familiar, as then that's all I have, you know? And then I'm like, oh, who wrote this? You know what I mean? Like, but yeah. So are we moving to our next song?
What song did you pick to talk about?
Okay, so I'm picking Alapa Up from Circus. Which came out in 1994. But before that, I want to share with you how... Well, in the first episode, I shared how I heard of Eraserheads. It's just really on the radio. And it was just like around. But I've only ever seen them once. And that was in January 20th, 1996, at the Araneta Coliseum. They were the opening, they were the special guests for Beastie Boys, Sonic Youth, and Foo Fighters.
Oh, what? Oh, okay, yes. I they mentioned this in the documentary too, but I didn't really expand on that. But so you were at that show.
Yeah, I was. It was my first like big concert. I went by myself. My papang, my mom's dad, just passed away a few days beforehand, and I had tickets. I had the, I think the 300 peso tickets or something, which isn't the cheapest. I think the cheapest might be 100 pesos. But yeah, I just remembered, you know, I was like, maybe I shouldn't go because like we have a wake in our house because everyone's in our house because we live with our grandparents. And also like, I'm like, you know, crying and sad and stuff. And then my mom was who, you know, we didn't get along at that time, was like, you should just go. And I'm like, okay. And one of my cousins dropped me off. I got there, I went in line, and I was seated on the 300 peso seats when Eraserheads went on. I heard like a bunch of stomping, like running, you know, from the 100 peso seats. Mm-hmm. I think that's the price. Yes, it is actually. Oh, it was the 200 peso seat, not 300, 200. So I was sitting there, and then like I heard, yeah, lots of stomping. And then I was like, I basically followed the stomping and followed people jumping into the pit. And then when I jumped to the pit, someone jumped on top of me and I felt like throwing up, but I was like, no, I got this. Like, imagine if that happened now, like I would probably have like broken my back or something. But I was a teenager when this happened. Was I like 16?
This was your first show?
Yeah, my first concert. I told you I played a show before my first concert.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, I was able to make my way to, Yeah, I was 17, actually. I was able to make my way up front. That's how I first saw them. But I didn't really care for anyone except for Sonic Youth and Beastie Boys at that point. I was like, I just want to see Sonic Youth and Beastie Boys.
I mean, that must have been like a good show overall, though. Just
it was amazing.
Like, especially at like all of their primes.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think, was it last year or 2 years ago, I was able to open up for Kim Gordon, which was like, whoa, like that was amazing. Cause
wow.
I know, I was like, I didn't meet her though, because I was too embarrassed. I was like, I can't say hi. I'm too nervous. No.
She has a show coming up here too. I wonder if she'll get tickets.
You should go. Mm. But yeah, so that was the first and only time I've ever seen Eraserheads. And Alapaap, I like that song a lot. I remember hearing it for the first time and thinking, like, it sounds familiar. It sounds like Reach by Pale Fountains. And later on, I think I read that Eli Buendia did admit that, like, he acknowledged the similarity, but I'm just like, similarity, it's like the same. And then remember when we were chatting last week, we saw that there were other songs that were.
Yeah. So if you go on Who Sampled and look up Alapaap, you'll find Reach by the Pale Fountains. You also see It's a Shame About Ray by the Lemonheads. And We Hate It When Our Friends Become Successful by Morrissey. And
yeah.
I don't know if I don't think I've heard enough
of those other two songs.
Do you?
I hear both. Yeah, for sure. But also, both of those are also not that uncommon. So, I don't know. Just Reach by Pale Fountains, that intro is, it's just like embedded in my mind, because like I said in the previous episode, and if you're familiar with my work, I really love new wave. I love like indie, jangle, that stuff. So I love the Pale Fountains, and I heard it immediately.
Yeah, and I don't think I even knew those. I definitely didn't know those bands back then. I mean, I definitely know who they are now, but yeah, were those bands that were like common for people to have heard in the early mid 90s in the Philippines, or is that just like
80s?
Oh, 80s. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, Pale Fountains for sure. In the 80s. I mean, they would play it on WXB and like on radio stations. Like it was common to hear. I mean, I remember it. But I'm going to tell you something funny about Alapaap. And also another song by Teeth called Laklak. And there was another song by Yano. I can't remember it. But anyways, like Tito Soto. Oh my God. I don't know what happened to him. But Tito Soto was like, you know, kind of thinking that maybe he thought that they were suggestive lyrics, like to drugs. Like they were like promoting drug use from those songs. Like, I mean, Laklak is like alak, right? Like alcohol. And then Alapaap, they're saying like, you know, like, oh, you want people to be high and stuff. So it's kind of silly. And yeah, so there was that controversy. And then eventually I read that they met with Senator Tito Soto and vowed to join the Junior Drug Watch for their anti-drug campaign. It's so silly.
was that just the way the Philippines was in that era? Or like, was he just being ridiculous?
I mean, even now, well, yeah, sure. Back then. I mean, even now, there's still stuff going on. It's just silly. Especially, you know, I'm disappointed because, like, I'm a big fan of Tito Soto's music, you know? Like, I'm like, bro, what happened? But anyways.
I mean, yeah. In the post-Marcos era, like, you know, the stars of the 70s became politicians. for better or for worse, right?
It might be for worse. Yes, it's for worse. So, yeah, that's my Alapaap thing. I dig it.
Yeah, like it's also in the documentary too. But like, yeah, like I think like and you mentioned Teeth, like, so they would play this on the radio maybe up until like, yeah, Tito Vic had something to say about it. But yeah, like, were these popular songs? Were they? Like,
yeah. Big? Yeah.
And do you think people had general recognition? Oh, this is about like bad things. You know, we don't want bad influence on our kids kind of thing.
I don't know what people are thinking back home. I just remembered there's this funny scene that I experienced in my life. Do you call that a scene? One of my cousins who was a drug addict, he was definitely doing shabu, which is, what is it, crystal meth.
Yeah.
He was listening to Francis Magalona's Praning while he was like laying down and like resting in my mamang's sofa, my grandma's sofa. Like yelling the song, mga praning, mga praning, mga praning. It's about like praning is like what you call someone who's like paranoid, who like, because they're doing shabu, you know? Like he's on shabu and he's like listening to the song and singing and laying down. It's, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, my point is that I don't know what people thought of these songs, but surely people who identify with these songs probably are singing. Like Lak Lak is like about alak. I don't know. I'm actually not sure if I'm a good co-host because I am so bad at deciphering lyrics. A lot of times I make my own lyrics up. I'm a melody person. I'm like like maganda yung tono, maganda yung melody. Sige, game. You know, if there's a hook. Yes. And then like connected to these are my memories, you know, listening to these songs. So that's what I have for you. And I love liner notes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's another thing that's like kind of lost is like, you know, and that's probably why I got into vinyl, but also because like, you know, in the era before streaming, all we had was physical media, right? And so you kind of went through a journey of like, you know, when I bought my first Eraserhead CD, it was like, yeah, it was some lyrics in there and like some pictures and stuff. And it was just like, and I was in the era where else would I find that?
Yeah. You
know, like there wasn't like a FAQ or news group, or there might have been actually, but there wasn't like somewhere easily that I could have found to like, you know what these songs, these lyrics were, and you know, if there was any kind of like backstory or even like who was like involved with these compositions, you know.
Well, we had we call it song hits, you know, where lyrics are published. They're like magazines or zines, but like in like newsprint. That would have lyrics and guitar chords to songs, and a lot of these are not official releases. It's like, I guess, a group of people like deciphering like the chords of these songs. Oh yeah,
like they're called like fake books or something like that, right?
We call it song hits.
And I think I picked up a couple thick book versions of these at a national bookstore when I was there last. There was like a bunch of different like Filipino pop songs and like the lyrics and other things.
I want to see that. Chords.
Yeah, I have it somewhere around here if I didn't give it away. But also, yeah, like that's a good point. Like a lot, like if I knew lyrics to anything is because there was a karaoke version maybe. And actually when my parents got one of those Magic Sing microphones, like I realized at a certain point, oh, I can go on like Amazon or whatever and buy chips for them. Have songs that I would want to sing, and actually ended up getting chips that had like Eraserhead songs on it, including Alapap actually, and Overdrive and some other songs.
Oh, cute.
Which is also like a good way to like see if my pronunciations of things is accurate, because then my parents will like smirk or snicker if I say something kind of wrong, or they're just like, "What are you saying?" And it's like, oh, come on, you guys didn't teach me any of this, you know. And again, to clarify, my parents never taught me Tagalog, and they didn't even really speak Tagalog. They spoke other languages in the Philippines, so like, you know, me learning kind of what these songs are about even is just like, it's very surface level too, so don't feel too bad, Les, because like,
yeah,
you know, I kind of just like look at the translations like, is that what they're really saying? I mean, this is true for like any international music I've collect. I mean, if anyone knows me now, like a lot of the records I buy are like, you know, canto pop, like city pop, Japanese things, or just things that are not in English, honestly. And it's kind of like, well, I kind of either have to like go off the vibe, you know, if the melody is there, then it's, you know, the melody is there. And if it's not, then it's like, you know, or like somebody like will let me know. And actually, yes, I've collected Cantopop records, like, and people telling me like, oh, you got that like record, like when my mom used to listen to that. And I'd ask them like, so what is it about? Can you tell me what the song is about? And so it's fascinating to kind of like hear like what those songs meant to them. And that's why I have you on the show, is because you may or may not understand all the lyrics or have like a specific connection to what they're saying. But I mean, it is something that like existed in like your lore. And so if anything, this is a less lore podcast.
Well, it's also connected to growing up in the Philippines. Not the radio hits are not all in languages that everyone understands. So the Philippines has many languages, not dialects, like not just dialects, like many languages. And on the radio, we had hits by, for example, Pizzicato 5, and everyone would sing it, but we don't know what it means, you know? Like, I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone, but like, I certainly didn't understand. I understand more Japanese now than then, but like, for example, I can sing in full some songs in Portuguese, but I don't know what it means. But it was a hit song back home, like crazy. So one of the songs that was a hit song when I was growing up was Lanza Perfume by Rita Lee and Roberto. And there's also a Filipino cover of it, but not in Tagalog, in Portuguese. So I know how to sing it. I have met people who know how to sing it as well, because they would hear it on the radio so much, you know. But anyways, I was on tour in Brazil last year and I was playing that song. And then it was explained to me that it's about a drug, which actually was offered to me as well at this festival. I DJ'd at. I didn't try it. I'm scared of doing anything that alters my, my state. So no, the point though, is,
like, yeah,
I grew up listening to songs that I don't fully understand. And then I speak in English, I speak in Tagalog, but I, you know, like, I don't understand what everything means all the time. But also I know, like, my brain is a little different. With that said, like, as you know, I also have a lot of Canto records in Mandarin. And so to me, it's like, well, I guess this is a podcast episode by to music loving people who don't always have to understand the lyrics of things.
But I mean, it makes a good point too, because like growing up in America, like especially when I grew up in the 80s and 90s, it was very much like, you know, there wasn't a lot of ways to explore other music unless it got big here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you lived in a community that had like a lot of like immigrants or people who brought that music with them.
Mm-hmm.
But also growing
Like the new wave, like the Vietnamese,
But like growing up like Filipino American, like, you know, I mean, there is like already a lot of kind of like acculturation and like Western influence, you know, in the music of the Philippines, or the music that was like popular in the Philippines. A lot of things that I like, I tend to gravitate towards are like covers of like American songs, but like in maybe like Tagalog or maybe in Cantonese or, you know. And that being said, like, you know, whether or not the translations come across properly or whether or not people even fully understand what's being said is, sometimes besides the point, you know?
Yeah.
And I think like, one, like, as I was saying, like, as I listen to more like songs from the Philippines and trying to kind of understand what's being said and like letting like the songs kind of be a better way to learn that than just like, you know, whatever language teaching course I could take. But also just kind of like recognizing that like in other countries, like there's also those influences too. Like you're talking about Portuguese, and like I think about like, you know, like a song like Batucada La Sacalesa, right? And like, you know, Filipinos doing like, you know, bossa nova songs, and like, people in like Taiwan doing, you know, British New Wave songs. And it's just like music isn't just like this thing that's confined to, you know, the genre and the language. It's like, good music is just good music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, whether or not you fully understand it, I will never claim to understand everything that I listen to, even if it's in English. But
okay, good.
I definitely like link up these songs to kind of like where I was at the time and how it made me feel. And I think that's the important thing about music. And like, I think as we get into more songs and talk about more things, how much that music is it shapes, and it's shaped by kind of like the moments in which they kind of emerge. So, mm-hmm. you know.
This Filipino American Life is produced by Michael Nailat. Our intro and outro music is by Roger Habon, aka 10.4 Raj, resident reality checker Girly Colado, legal advisor Rianne Fajardo, and graphic design by Vincent Collier.